It's Too Late to Die Young is the new book from music journalist and author Andrew Mueller. It charts his career in music journalism as well as what he sees as the decline of the rock and roll industry and the music industry in general. Róisín Dwyer has been reading it for us and she's with us in studio now. Mueller himself, where did he start out as a journalist and what kind of music journalist is he?
Andrew Mueller is from Sydney. He started out writing for a free sheet in Sydney in the early 80s. And from there, he contributed to Melody Maker, a magazine he held in high regard. He was a huge fan of it. So he decided to try and carve out a career in music journalism for himself. And he moved to London in the mid 80s, became a staff writer with Melody Maker. And there he stayed till the mid 90s. Being there, he got to cover the birth of grunge and all the birth of Britpop and all the exciting movements that happened during that period.
In fact, I think I misquoted the title of the book. It's Too Late to Die Young Now.
That's it.
Is the full title of the book. So that 80s and 90s period and the birth of grunge and Britpop, is that what he considers to be the heyday of rock and roll?
No, he considers it the heyday of music journalism. Well, that and I suppose the decade that preceded it. Because in those days, there were very few outlets for music fans to read about the groups they liked. And there weren't a million blogs and websites. So in the UK, you had the NME and Melody Maker. In the States, you had Rolling Stone. And these were, like when the Melody Maker came out, you know, you made sure you got down to the shop early, you saved up your pocket money and you read it from cover to cover, possibly several times. And from being a regular reader, you know, you got to know the in-jokes, you got to know your favourite journalist and you got to know what your favourite journalist liked. So they became your guide almost.
Well, they were the arbiters of taste.
That's it. You know, I mean, there was no, you know, listen to an advanced stream on the website. You know, you didn't have that guide. So the music journalist was your guide. You got to know their taste. If they recommended an album, that was the one you blew your pocket money on.
And to what extent do you think that had to do with the nature of the relationship that the journalists had with the musicians at that time, which is very different from a modern day relationship? They were almost embedded with them in some ways because they traveled with them.
Yes, absolutely. But I think the journalists in those days had a great freedom because, you know, they knew that they sort of held the power almost. So, and especially in the Melody Maker, Andrew Mueller makes the point that Melody Maker saw themselves as gatekeepers, whereas the NME were cheerleaders. So there were a lot of scathing and rather hilarious reviews, you know, in the Melody Maker, and they weren't afraid to pull punches. But there was, I mean, music journalists at that time, you know, it was normal if you were writing a feature to go on the road with the act for a week, whereas now you're shunted into, you know, a record company's office for 10 minutes face to face perhaps.
And how much of a music fan is he as well as this journalist?
He is a rabid music fan. Like he writes about his youth and, you know, listening to music and, you know, discovering his love of writing and then finding himself at a gig knowing he was going to write a review and not quite believing that he was actually going to be paid money for this. And, you know, in the early parts of the book, he writes a lot about the great underground scene in Australia at the time. And throughout the book, there are sections where he'll do his top 10 albums of that year.
So we very much get to know the music that he loved.
We get to know his music taste. And he does admit that he is a fan of the underappreciated genius. So a lot of that is quite obscure as well.
And he was a big reader of Melody Maker before he got to work for them.
He was a huge reader of Melody Maker. He couldn't quite believe his luck. You know, he recounts the first time because he just posted off a review to them. And then, you know, he ran to the shop that shipped in the Melody Maker, which he had to wait weeks for it to arrive from the UK, and opening, you know, the review pages with trembling hands and then seeing, oh no, some other guy has reviewed that exact concert in that exact venue. And he even has the same name. Hold on a minute. You know, the great excitement of getting to write for the newspaper he loved.
We must get stories of, you know, anecdotes of when he did become a journalist and he travelled around and he did go on these great tours and to these great shows. Do we get much of that sort of behind-the-scenes
of story? And, you know, he went on tour with The Cure and he said, you know, he had to pinch himself because he's sitting on a tour bus with The Cure thinking, 2 years ago, I was in my bed bedroom in Sydney, looking up on at my wall, and there was a poster of Robert Smith, and now he's sitting across the tour bus from me. But you know, personas sort of get, you know, veneers get smashed, you know, as opposed to the Cure sitting in their tour buses, po-faced, stroking their chins, reading French poetry. You know, they're messing about, drinking beer and squirting ketchup at each other. But I have to say, another thing that needs to be said is Andrew Mueller is a superb writer, and he has a wicked sense of humour. So, you
it's
know,
easy to read.
It's an absolute page.
There is an Irish connection in you too.
There is, yes. Andrew, as he admits, being a champion of the underappreciated, was a huge fan of the Fatima Mansions. And an assignment came up to review U2's Zoo TV tour in Barcelona. The Fatima Mansions were the opening act, so he volunteered for the assignment. And he went along, and he was not a fan of the band to that point, but he does write in his review that witnessing the spectacle of U2 on the stage was akin to witnessing a bishop burn down a cathedral, because he was so impressed, and he felt that, you know, the Octoon Baby flew in the face of all the output that had gone before. But
and did he revised his opinions then? Wasn't he asked to look at the back catalogue?
Somewhat, yes. Then following the publication of his glowing review, he went into work one day and found a box on his desk, which was U2's entire back catalogue, with a note from the record company inviting him to revise his opinion.
So he does say this thing about music journalism is basically dead, is what he's suggesting. What does he say actually about music itself? He's quite hard on technological advances.
Yes. Well, he says at that, well, he says he makes the point that rock and roll has had its day, and that's a point that is often mooted. You know, pop has eaten itself. All the great genres, you know, we've had rock, pop, punk, post-punk, you know, grunge. All the great genres that are to exist now, and everything that happens is just variations of, which is a point. But I think it's a little pessimistic to say rock has had its day. There are still amazingly original takes on subgenres and mixing.
And I guess every 50-year-old thinks that when they were 20, that was the golden age.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
What about the whole idea that he says that music journalism is dead?
That, well, I think he says, actually, and he says it in a way that's quite sad. He says, I'm sorry that music journalism doesn't exist now in the way it did then.
But does he address this idea? You see, he's talking about a time when they were the purveyors of taste. They were the gatekeepers. That's a huge responsibility, number one.
Yes.
And does he mention the idea that perhaps they weren't totally objective?
Actually, he skims over that. But now, of course, you know, music journalism, there are no vital voices. There are a million blogs out there, a million publications dealing with various subgenres of music. But I think he just misses the, like, he speaks about, you know, being, you know, a lonely teenager growing up in Sydney, and this great magazine that he got every fortnight really being a lifeline for him, and him, you know, learning all the in-jokes. It was like being a member of a club almost. Yeah, so I think in that regard, he says, you know, he's sorry that it doesn't exist in that way anymore.
Yes, but clubs are not always the most democratic of things. Does he have problems with the democracy of the digital age, where you can literally hear everything at the flick of a button?
No, he doesn't have a problem with it. I think he just thinks it devalues music. Maybe in a day where you saved up your pocket money and you went into the record shop and you really had to agonise over what album am I going to buy this month because I can't afford to buy anything for another month. I think he misses that, and there's something to be said about not having a million songs at the click of a mouse.
Well, in fact, it's something that we will probably pick up on in our next item with Mark Whelan, all about vinyl and a new vinyl club that's been formed in Dublin. Overall then, this book that we've been talking about, It's Too Late to Die Young Now, from the music journalist Andrew Mueller, what would you say, Roisin Dwyer? Who is it for? Is it worth reading?
I loved this book. It's for music fans, anyone with an interest in journalism, and anyone with an interest in pop culture. And it's extremely entertaining read as well.
All right, Roisin Dwyer talking to us then about It's Too Late to Die Young Now from Andrew Mueller. It's published by Picador.